Good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet and I'm here in the studio with Lauren Landis. Patty Fink will be back with us next week. Turns out that her kidney stones was a tear.
It tore a muscle?
No. Anyway, she had to be operated on, and
I'll let her tell it.
Yeah, we'll let her tell it. And she will be back. She's fine. It was just outpatient procedure. Finally, after 4 weeks of pain and agony, and a hernia, and she's fine now. But she couldn't make it to the studio. She's still at home resting. Get well, Patty. And our guest today is Sister Janine Gramick. I met Sister Janine about 3-4 weeks ago. She was here in Dallas. And I'd heard her name for years. Sister Janine has worked on gay and lesbian issues for years, since before you were born, Lauren. Janine, I'm sorry, but it's before he was born. And we had a wonderful conversation while she was here, and I asked her to come on the show. Are you there, Janine?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hello, Sister.
Nice to meet you.
And tell us a little bit about it. What happened was, or the work that you've been doing is through an organization that you co-founded called New Ways Ministries. Tell us, how did you get involved in working on gay and lesbian issues?
Well, I got involved in lesbian and gay issues, as you said, before you were born, probably before many or even most of your listeners were born. In 1971, I was a graduate student at the University of Pennsylvania. And I'm a religious sister. I'm a Catholic nun.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting a degree to teach mathematics at a college that my community operated. And while I was there studying, I met a young man, a gay man, and we became very close friends. I met him at a home mass. It's a liturgical service, that the Catholic community had.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there, after the liturgy, I spoke with him, and he shared really his story, his life story with me. We became very good friends. He had been in a religious community, and he left the community because he felt that his being gay was incompatible with that calling, which we know it's not, but that's what he felt back in the 1960s. And he was an activist in the early days of the gay movement, and we became very good friends. And I started a ministry, if you will, with Dominic and his friends right there in Pennsylvania, at Philadelphia. We would have a religious service at his apartment every week. And that was the beginning of this ministry.
To show how far this group of yours has come, right now one of the projects you're working on is in Maryland. It's a project to educate legislators who are considering a vote on same-sex marriage.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about that project, because and the reason I'm jumping right into that one is I really want our listeners to understand you're right in the middle of this equal rights fight.
Yes. Well, it's been in committee for a while and still in committee, but we feel in the next legislative session in Maryland, which will be start in January, we feel that there are enough votes that will come out of committee to be voted on. And it's a bill to extend marriage to same-sex couples in Maryland right now because of the executive branch of the state. Department of Maryland. Maryland recognizes same-sex marriages from other states, but you cannot get married in the state of Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
So this would extend marriage to Maryland. And what we are doing at New Ways Ministry is, we're working on a booklet that will put together some views of the Catholic position, if you will, not just the position of the Catholic bishops. I think everyone is aware of that. They're all across the country. They're trying to defeat same-sex marriage legislation, but the views of Catholics in general. And we see from polls that have been taken that Catholics really are very enlightened when it comes to same-sex issues. And in fact, it's approximately, not quite, but approximately half of Catholics would support same-sex marriage. And theologians, the theological community, is very much, on the whole, not everything's not, you know, perfectly,
sure,
but on the whole, supportive of same-sex marriage. So we are putting together a booklet that would educate the legislators and the community at large, and we will, are going to hold sessions, public sessions, to and have press conferences to let people know that there are alternative Catholic positions on same-sex marriage besides what the Catholic, you hear from Catholic bishops.
Okay, so really what it is I guess there are a number of legislators who would, they'd vote with us. They might not be as staunch as you and I are, but they'd vote with us, but they're worried about losing the Catholic vote.
That's
and
right.
The point of this is to show them that they might lose the support of the Catholic Church, but they're not going to lose the support of Catholic voters.
Well, when you say they'll lose the support of the Catholic Church, yeah. I mean, I think you're equating church with bishops. And we,
right,
in the Catholic community, when we say church, well, you have to always define your terms. And church, really, to most of us since the Second Vatican Council, church is the people of God. So they might lose the vote of a few bishops in Maryland, mm-hmm, but they won't lose the vote of the Catholic people.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, that's the point we want to get across.
Sure. Okay, and I just wanted to jump right into that one because I think it's a perfect example of just, you know, while you are a Catholic nun, you are also a staunch gay and lesbian rights advocate and have been for a number of years. And I just want listeners to understand right where you are and that. Okay, so let's talk about, let's go back in time again. You founded this ministry. Was it harder at the time back in the 1970s to be Catholic in the church and working for gay and lesbian rights, or, you know,
There have been differences. I have noticed differences over time. And in the early days, let's say in the 70s, in the early 80s, we found at New Ways Ministry, we had some quiet support from Bishop.
Mm-hmm.
But since from the 80s, the mid-80s on, when Pope John Paul II became Pope and now his successor, the bishops that have been appointed to these different dioceses across the country have been more conservative than the previous ones.
Mm.
So I see one change that I see is on the institutional level, that while the issue of lesbian, gay ministry was new in the church in the 70s and the early 80s, there was not a wholesale but limited support from Catholic hierarchy, and now that has shifted, that there is very minimal support. I could count on my hand the number of bishops that would be supportive. But another change that I've seen that has made it much easier is that in the 70s and the early 80s, the topic was new to the people of the church, you know, to the real church, the grassroots church, the people in the pew. You wouldn't hear the word homosexuality, gay. You wouldn't hear that talked about in your church.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't pick up a Catholic newspaper and read that there was going to be a retreat for gay Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
But that has changed over the decades, so that now it is quite commonplace, if you will, to read in Catholic newspapers about gay issues, and not just that the bishops are opposed, but sometimes, you know, you also see in Catholic magazines the supportive kind of news. So the two kinds of changes I've seen are on the higher institutional level, it's been regression.
Mm-hmm.
And on the grassroots level, there's been progression.
Yeah.
Sister, you mentioned that during this time there was some quiet support from bishops. I was wondering if you could maybe elaborate or clarify what their definition, or maybe what your definition of support is.
Like in the early days when I was in this ministry, and I was at that time living in Baltimore after I finished my studies at the university, and I was working then as a chaplain for Dignity, which is an organization for lesbian and gay Catholics, and we weekly mass. We started out at our convent chapel. We had one of the auxiliary bishops come and celebrate the Eucharist, the Mass, for us. There was that kind of support. We moved from the convent chapel into various churches in the diocese, and the bishop of the diocese was supportive. I mean, it wasn't advertised in the Catholic paper, but he knew that this was happening, and this was sanctioned, if you will. And this was true in other parts of the country as well, that Dignity had chapters across the country, many of which had meetings and mass celebrated in Catholic churches. Mm-hmm. But from the mid-80s on, you see a change on the institution.
And that's exactly what happened here in Dallas. They started off mm-hmm. by meeting at the Catholic Church here in Oak Lawn, which isn't seen as being particularly unfriendly to the gay and lesbian community. Yeah, I think it's kind of in between in its support. But now they meet at Cathedral of Hope, which is the large gay and lesbian church that's part of UCC. They're not allowed in the Catholic Church here locally now. Yeah.
Well, the reason why, and I'm glad you clarify that, because to the general public, and such as me, who's a non-Catholic, I think the perception is sometimes when people say they support, especially from religious institutions, is that what they really mean is, as long as we accept gay and lesbian people, but as long as you don't practice it.
Well, that has always been the case, even when I say, in the early days, that in the 70s and early 80s, we had support from the hierarchy. Even though, and I know bishops who would be supportive, privately, they're not going to come out publicly,
mm-hmm.
And even though they might agree with same-sex marriage, there are exceptions, like Bishop Gumbleton has said publicly that he supports same-sex marriage, but he's an exception.
Mm-hmm. When he says he supports it, does he give the reason that he supports it?
Well, I don't remember, but, I would just think that he thinks it's a question of justice.
Justice in establishing families is a good thing, and stability for people, and all the healthy reasons that we do support it.
Right, because he is a firm believer in peace and justice.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and this would just be a part of it.
I'd like to also make a note here. We've talked about bishops, but women religious or nuns in the Catholic Church mm-hmm. Have been great advocates for lesbian and gay people. In fact, the first Catholic organization to support gay rights was the National Coalition of American Nuns in 1973.
Hmm.
And
wow.
That was the first Catholic group to come out publicly to support gay rights.
Hmm.
And, usually when I travel across the country and meet with Catholics and they say, well, how can I, help to start a ministry of some kind to help people become more aware? I said, find some nuns in your, in your city,
mm-hmm.
and they will help you get started.
And that brings up something that I hadn't even thought about until I saw you here in Dallas. We hear about priests and gay priests, and we hear about all that for all the wrong reasons, but we never hear about lesbian nuns. And you said at the time that you thought a large percentage of nuns are lesbian.
No, actually, I don't think a large percentage of nuns are lesbian.
When I say large percentage, I don't mean a majority. I just mean like a larger percentage than you would expect in the general population.
Well, I'm not sure I would say that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But maybe what you referring to, or what maybe I would have said, is that people often think that that nuns are asexual.
Right. Okay.
And women religious have a sexual orientation, mm-hmm. Just as everyone else. But for many, many years in the convents, you know, and mostly even today, there's not much talk about sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
But we are beginning now more to talk about sexuality as in a personal way. So that one of the projects of New Ways Ministry, the group that I helped to start, is to have a conference and a newsletter for women religious who are lesbian. And more and more, this is probably what I was referring to, more and more lesbian sisters are beginning to claim who they are and come out of the closet.
Oh, okay.
But that's been a very slow and gradual thing.
Has there been any official reaction from the hierarchy of the church about them coming out?
I'm not sure most of the bishops are aware. First retreat that New Ways Ministry sponsored for lesbian nuns was way back in 1979,
huh.
And the Vatican did hear about it and tried to stop the retreat. But since that time, the programs have been, I think, more quiet, if you will. They're advertised through internal channels.
It's kind of easier to do that now.
Sure, bishops are aware that that there are, these retreats going on.
It's kind of easier to do that now with email.
Yes, exactly.
You can get in touch with a very targeted audience, whereas before you would print something and, who knows where it would go.
But while the bishops may not be aware, the superiors, and I hate to call them that, but that's how people, know of them, or how people call them.
Yeah.
But the women religious leaders of the different communities are aware that there are retreats and conferences, and one of the one of the projects at New Ways Ministry for the last 5 years is to have a conference for the lesbian sisters, the congregational leaders, and formation and vocation personnel, those three constituencies coming together to talk about mutual support and education. And those conferences have been yearly, and they've been very, very helpful.
We're talking to Sister Janine Gramick. She is from New Ways Ministries. Sister Janine, stick with us. We need to take just a quick break, and we will be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Okay.
Jennifer Huebner-Davidson with AAA. As 56 million students across the country get ready to head back to school, AAA reminds you, school's open, drive carefully. To help keep our kids safe, please follow these important driver safety tips. Obey the speed limit. Beware of school zones, always stop for buses that are loading and unloading students, and eliminate any distractions such as talking on your cell phone when you're driving. Remember, school's open, drive carefully. For more important school safety tips, visit AAA.com.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis. Patty will be back with us next week. It was a hernia. We remembered what it was. A hernia that Patty had that was repaired this week. Patty is getting better. She will be back with us next week. We're talking to Sister Janine Gramick. She is one of the founders of New Ways Ministries. Sister Janine, I was going to introduce you by saying that you were my favorite nun since Sister Batrill, and I told that to Laurent. I said, now if I say that, do you have any idea what I'm talking about? And he said, no.
He's not old enough.
He is not old enough to know the flying nun. And you've never, just for the record, put on one of those habits and flown.
No, I haven't.
You have not. Just asking.
Sister, let's talk a little bit more about the ministry, and because I would assume that part of the purpose is to retain gay and lesbians who were part of the Catholic Church and who thought that they, because of their sexual orientation, that that's incompatible with Catholicism. And this isn't just specific to Catholicism. You know, I have friends who were Baptists and said they have left that church because it's incompatible.
Are the Baptists not friendly to gays and lesbians? I wasn't sure on that one.
So I just wonder, could you talk a little bit about that, and what would you say to someone who is grappling with their sexual orientation and trying to stay with their church, specifically Catholicism?
Well, I would say that whether one is Catholic or Baptist or Jewish mm-hmm. or whatever faith tradition or no faith tradition, that hopefully we all want to be good moral persons. And in growing to maturity as a moral individual, we need to use our conscience. You know, we have to come to our own conscience decisions. And that's what God wants of us, mm-hmm. to use the intellect that we have. And in making decisions about one's life choices or specific actions or whatever, in making choices in life, we have the help of guidelines. And that's what religion, any religion, is meant to give us, some guidelines. And so if I'm speaking with a Catholic, I say, well, these are the guidelines from our tradition. So you need to know what these guidelines are. And the bishops, their responsibility is to give us some guidelines. Now, as we know from the past, not the guidelines sometimes change, you know, over time because we know more and learn more and so on. But at any rate, we need to know what the guidelines are. And I think for a Catholic or for most people, they know what the Catholic guidelines are about sexual activity. But there are other guidelines, like following your conscience. The next thing I say is you have to know what contemporary moral theologians are thinking and writing on the subject. And if you do a lot of reading on that, and one should, you come to the conclusion that most Catholic moral theologians differ from the bishops on their evaluation of the goodness or the wrongness of homosexual activity. And most Catholic moral theologians would say, in a loving relationship, if there's no like manipulation or force or evil intent involved, that in a loving relationship, that one can express that love in a sexual way. So you have to know what moral theologians are saying. Mm-hmm. And then you have to take into account your own experience. What does your experience tell you about the goodness or the wrongness of your relationship with the other gender, mm-hmm. With the same gender? And then you take, if you can have, and I always advise, a spiritual director. And a spiritual director could be a friend. Somebody that you trust and respect, and talk things over. And after you do all of this, I call research and study, then you go to a quiet place and you talk to God about it. You make what we call a conscience decision. And so that whole process helps us to grow as individuals. We become mature in our faith, whatever our faith is. Mm-hmm. And that's the important thing that I say to Catholics. And your conscience decision may be different from the guidelines of your church, all right? Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you are excluded from your church. It just means your conscience decisions are different. I mean, we have so many Catholics whose conscience decisions differ from the guidelines of the bishops. Most Catholics who are married do not accept or do not believe, they've come to a different conscience position on birth control, mm-hmm. from what our bishops have taught. But they maintain their conscience.
Right.
So it's the same situation for, I think, gay and lesbian Catholics who come to a different conclusion about their life than what the bishops have said.
Have you had many parents of gay and lesbian children come to the same conclusion, who are grappling with, I guess, maybe the traditional views of homosexuality as opposed to your ministry?
Yes. In the early days when we worked with parents, we still work with parents, but the parents would be agonizing because they loved their children, their gay and lesbian children,
mm-hmm.
and they loved their church, and they were agonizing about putting the two together, you know. Now, there's not so much agonizing. There's a lot of anger that mm-hmm. I have noticed among Catholic parents that they want their bishop to accept the lives of their gay and lesbian children, their spouses, their, just as the church accepts the heterosexual spouses of their children.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a change in the attitude of parents. Most parents that I encounter these days have come to that conclusion
mm-hmm.
That their children deserve to have a wonderful life with another partner, just as they have their husband or their wife. Their children deserve to have a partner.
Right.
And they want the leaders of their church to sanction that. Now, realistically, we need to be realistic. The Catholic Church and other churches change over time.
Mm-hmm.
But, to expect to see that kind of change in my lifetime, that might be an unrealistic expectation. So we're caught in that time frame of following your conscience when it goes against the establishment, so to speak.
Right. That goes to the first question I asked you when we first met, and that was this. I said, you know, in states that have larger Catholic populations, you're more likely, or the states that have legislated rights for gays and lesbians are most likely states that have larger Catholic populations. And one of the reasons for that, I think, is that Catholics in general have learned a lesson from the church, and that is social justice. It's not a coincidence that you have all of these Catholics in Massachusetts, and a majority of them do support same-sex marriage there. It's something, they've gone through that process that you just described, and they have come to the decision, but that decision has to be at least partly determined by what their upbringing was, and part of that upbringing is what they learned from the church. So what my question really is what's the disconnect between what Catholics have learned from the church and what the church is saying? And it almost seems like a funny disconnect because, okay, I'm getting these things like I should be family-oriented and love my kids, and then you're telling me something else that I should do with my kids when it turns out that one of them is gay or lesbian. You're teaching me that marriage is a good thing, and I know my kid's a good kid, and he's successful, and he, you know, went to school, and, you know, all these things, and he has a nice partner, and they, you know, they do good things for their community. And then you're telling me something completely different here. There's a disconnect there, isn't there?
Yes, I think you put your finger on a very good point. There is some disconnect, but it's also similar to parents who bring up their children
mm-hmm.
to be good thinkers, they want them to be discerning, and then they think that they're going to make the same decisions that the parent makes.
Right.
So in a sense, what we're seeing is that our Catholic leadership, our bishops, we've done a good job in teaching moral development,
mm-hmm.
but now the bishops have to learn to accept the fact that the results aren't what they wanted.
I like that. I want to go on to a little bit about education. On your website, it's newwaysministries.org. Do
yes,
I have that right?
Okay.
Ministry.org. Okay.
Yep. Singular.
It's singular for the website, newwaysministry.org, and people should go and look at it if you have Catholic questions, because there are good answers on this on the website. You have a list of Catholic schools that are gay positive.
You mean the colleges or universities?
Colleges and universities, yes.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how Catholic schools can run the gamut. University of Dallas here in Dallas is a Catholic school that ranks in the top five most homophobic schools on the Princeton Review. Came out again this year, and there they were, right near the top. And yet a school that I went to for graduate school, the College of St. Rose, it just never was an issue there. And there were plenty of other gay people going to school there in the 70s, and it's on your list of schools that are still one of the gay-friendly Catholic schools. What does a school need to do, first of all, just to make your list, what makes a gay-positive Catholic school?
A number of things. Usually these schools, on their website, they will list something that indicates they are gay-friendly. Like, they will have a group. Most of these have a group for GLBT students and their allies. That's probably the most common thing. They will have activities that would be supportive for GLBT students. They will present programs for GLBT students. So, or celebrate National Coming Out Day, or it could be a host of things. But as I said, most of them, if you go to their website, you can find something that indicates that they are GLBT friendly.
Who does a Catholic school answer to in doing those things?
Their own board of directors of the school. Bishops do not have direct control of Catholic colleges and universities unless they're pontifical, such as the Catholic University of America. There were some, or the Angelicum, not the Angelicum, the There are a few in which the Vatican has direct control here in the United States. But there are some that the diocese will have control. I think the College of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota, is run by the diocese. So there are some Catholic institutions that are run by a bishop or the Vatican. When I say run, I mean have ultimate control. But most Catholic colleges and universities grew up or were founded by religious orders of priests, brothers, or sisters. Now, because priests, brothers, and sisters are getting fewer and fewer, most of the Catholic colleges and universities are run by lay boards.
Oh, okay. And when I say, I was at College of St. Rose, it was back in the 70s, and when I say that it was gay-friendly, what I was really talking about at the time was it wasn't an issue. And like you said, it's...
Was there a group for...
There wasn't at the time, no. But I guess when I say it was gay-friendly, what I'm really saying is that it wasn't gay-unfriendly either. There was just... It was a non-issue, really, if you were interested in... the gay bars, well, they were right across the street from the school. So, they were right there. And the school never said anything negative about those being there. Just anything that would indicate anything negative was just simply absent. I've looked at the school's website. They do have a group now, and that's just something that has developed, I guess, over time. But that's a difference in the time, I think, really.
Well, in the last few years, there's been an effort on the part of Catholic colleges and universities to have conferences that would connect on the lesbian gay issue, that would connect the different Catholic colleges and universities, the students, staff, and faculty. There have been several of them. Of these conferences so that they can share what's happening on the different campuses.
And are the universities usually proactive in creating these groups, or do they just kind of let the students get together and they're not objecting to them?
Both. I mean, it always takes someone to initiate.
Sure. And that reminded me of something that happened, with a group just allowing the students to do the group. And it's quietly there, and it's there to support students that need it and just do what it needs to do. On an unrelated issue, a few years ago at my undergraduate school, a group of peace activists got together and they planned a demonstration against the war in Iraq. The school was just going to let it happen, and the FBI got wind of it and came on campus to do surveillance without even contacting the administration, and word got out that they had done this, and the president of the school was fuming that the federal government would interfere on campus without even contacting him and just asking, what do you think's going on? And when I saw this, you know, writing for the newspaper, I said, ooh, there's my school. I got right through to the president of the school, and he said, what makes me so mad is it was fewer than a dozen students. If they just let this demonstration go on with a dozen students, they have their demonstration, they leave, that's the end of it. This way, I'm furious. The rest of the student body here is furious that they would do this.
It got more notoriety.
It made national news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how dumb. And I was wondering if it was sort of the same thing with a lot of these gay and lesbian groups. Some students need support. We let them create their group. It's nice and quiet. As opposed to here in Dallas, just about 2 weeks ago, an Episcopal, and they're really not Episcopal, they're from one of the breakaway Episcopal groups who broke away, the Fort Worth Diocese broke away from the National Episcopal Church over the ordination of Gene Robinson. About 2 weeks ago, a lesbian couple had applied over the summer for their daughter to go to school at this school because they live in the suburb right near the school. The neighbors go to the school. It's a good school. They get a good education. They thought, great, we want our kid to go here. And the school didn't realize that Tracy was the second mom, not the dad. And they accepted her. Then when they realized that Tracy was second mom, they said she can't go to school here. We've heard of some cases of some Catholic schools doing that around the country. Generally, and the cases that we've heard have been isolated in all cases, but generally, what's the thinking that goes behind a school rejecting a kid because of who the parents are?
Well, but in the Archdiocese of Denver, this happened in Boulder, huh? And the response of the there were two mothers whose children went to this Catholic school for several years. And it was a very good school, and the children and the teachers, knew the situation, uh-huh. And it was a very progressive school, and at any rate, for some reason that hasn't become public, but somebody complained. The pastor said that the students may not come back because they have lesbian mothers, and the response of the bishop of that diocese was that the children would be hearing one thing taught in school and seeing that this was not being lived out in their home.
Mm-hmm.
Whereupon heterosexual parents were very upset because the heterosexual parents liked the lesbian couple and their children, and the heterosexual parents were saying, well, there are many things that are taught in school about guidelines that the Catholic Church has, and our children don't see these practices in our homes either. You know, we have parents who are divorced. We have parents who are not,
not faithful, not
following exactly what the strictures of the Catholic Church, the teachings of the bishop,
mm-hmm.
and yet our children are allowed at school. So it's a double standard, is what I'm saying, is that's operating. But
yeah.
but the rationale given by the bishop would be that he's trying to protect the students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks.
That's actually what the guy here said also.
Yeah.
That he was doing the family, the lesbian couple and her daughter a favor. I don't really see it like that.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. We're talking to Sister Janine Gramick of New Ways Ministries. We'll be back right after this.
KNON
KNON.org is your destination on the World Wide Web for information about your favorite community radio station. Listen live to KNON from any computer anywhere in the world with our live internet broadcast stream. There's a program schedule so you can find out when your favorite shows are on, plus information on all of KNON's personalities and formats. Contact us. Leave comments for your favorite DJs. Read their blog posts. Sign up to receive emails about KNON activities. Learn about local music events and be part of a thriving radio community. KNON.org has details on all of KNON's upcoming shows and benefits, an easy and secure way to get your advance tickets online through PayPal. You can get any of our regular premiums online or just show your support for KNON any day of the year by making a donation on the web to your favorite show at KNON.org.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I'm here in the studio with Lauren Landis, who has a hurt back, and Patty Fink, who had a hernia repaired this week, so I'm the only healthy one. And they always make fun of me for being the old guy. I know.
So, Patty, when you return, please bring me drugs.
Right. We're talking to Sister Janine Gramick. She is with New Ways Ministries. Sister Gramick is a nun. What is the order that you're with?
I'm a Sister of Loretto.
And you weren't with them 10 years ago when you were worried about being excommunicated, right?
Right.
I want you to tell that story. People have heard just how you have differed with the Catholic Church, but you've remained a Catholic nun and are in full standing with your order, and you have support of your order. But
yes.
But your mother superior was worried. When was it? Like 1998?
Yes. Well, as I've said that I got into this ministry in 1971,
right.
And for more than 20 years, the School Sisters of Notre Dame supported me in this ministry despite some complaints of some bishops. And the Vatican had heard about this ministry, some of the bishops complained, and asked the School Sisters of Notre Dame to investigate me. And they did, but their response to the Vatican was that this was an important ministry of the church and that I should continue. Well, finally, I guess the Vatican decided to appoint its own commission, and in the late 90s, the commission started to, you know, meet and examine myself and Father Nugent, the other person who started New Ways Ministry. And my religious superiors were concerned that we were going to get excommunicated because we weren't giving the Vatican the answers that they wanted. My provincial said, let's make a pilgrimage to the foundress, to the burial place of our foundress, which was in Munich, Germany. Mm-hmm. So we were in the airport in Rome to board a plane to go to Munich, and we got on the plane, and on the plane there was a gentleman who my provincial thought was a high-ranking Vatican official, and I didn't. I thought it was just some secretary, but at any rate, I sat down next to him, and we got into a conversation, and I found out that this was Cardinal Ratzinger, and this Cardinal Ratzinger is now Pope Benedict XVI,
right.
As many of your listeners know, and then when he found out who I was, that I was Sister Janine Gramick, who was being under investigation, he just smiled at me, and he has very beautiful blue eyes, and they twinkled, and he says, oh, yes, he says, I have known you for 20 years.
So
for 20 years, they had a file on our activities in New Ways Ministry. So we chatted, and my provincial also spoke with him, and she said to him that I was a very good sister, and that she was very worried. She said, our community is very worried that she's going to get excommunicated. And he said, oh, no. He said, it is not that level of doctrine, meaning homosexuality and what one believes or thinks or says, you know, about homosexuality. even if it's in disagreement with the hierarchical teaching, it's not something that you can get excommunicated for.
So there's actual
a huge sigh of relief.
Yeah.
So there's actual, I guess, a list of things, so to speak, of that you can get excommunicated for.
Well, yes, and the list is very sparse. And it's not, there isn't one list, but there are various canons in canon law, you know, that's church law.
Right.
And one thing that many women in the Catholic Church are very upset about is that you can get excommunicated for attempting an abortion.
Mm.
Yes. And there are other things. I don't have the list in my head, but
sure.
I know that's one thing that... I know because of working with the women.
So while doing anything related to gay and lesbian issues or your views on gay and lesbian issues or even speaking out for gay and lesbian, those don't rise to the level of excommunication. But let's say a priest in a parish decided that not only am I going to speak out, but I'm also going to perform same-sex marriages in the church. I bet that would rise to the level.
No? I don't think so.
Really?
There are various punishments, or what you will, or sanctions, but excommunication is a very serious thing.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, these days, a lot of people in the Catholic Church don't take it very seriously, and I'll explain why. Because what excommunication means, and it was a technique, if you will, or a punishment that evolved in the Middle Ages when the church and state were united.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to be outside of the pale, not in communion, you know, rejected, was a very serious thing. But
mm-hmm.
What it does mean is exactly that. You are excommunicated. You are ex outside of the communion or outside of the community. Now, in this day and age, like after the Second Vatican Council, when in the Catholic Church we realize the church is all of the people of God, one is excommunicated when the community says you are outside of our community. It's almost like shunning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the what religious group has the shunning? Whatever. You know what I mean.
Yes, yes, yes.
So if the community says that you are no longer considered part of us, then it's the community that does the excommunication, that shuns you.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there's a priest, Father Roy Bourgeois, a Maronite priest, who has spoken very publicly on the ordination of women.
Mm-hmm.
And the Vatican claims that he has excommunicated himself by speaking so boldly and forthrightly about the ordination of women. In fact, there are women in the Catholic Church who have been ordained by bishops, but the Vatican says they're excommunicated.
Hmm.
Well, they're only excommunicated if the community treats them that way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know, you know, Catholics, you know, the Catholics I know, I should say, do not treat them that way.
Right.
So these people are still part of the community.
Hmm.
Am I... Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. But what does it mean to them religiously, then, if they're excommunicated? Can they still go to services?
Yes. Now, from the point of view of the institution,
uh-huh.
what it means is that you may not receive the sacrament.
Okay.
However, even some, as I said, some of these people who we say, but that the Vatican says are excommunicated,
mm-hmm.
I know they go to church and receive the sacrament.
Hmm. So they really haven't been in effect.
It needs the community to, if the community shuns you, then you are excommunicated.
Right.
But no person just making a pronouncement can affect it unless others cooperate with that.
Mm-hmm.
And if the community says, no, this person isn't excommunicated, they're still part of the community.
Yeah.
And they are part of the community.
Yeah.
I know we're running out of time, but I wanted to touch on this, if not just for a minute. We know there are lesbian nuns and gay priests, the exact amount or exact percentage, who knows. But I wonder if you could talk about your opinion, and do you think some lesbians and gays enter into priesthood and none just because as a way to suppress their homosexuality?
Well, that may have been the case years ago. I'm not sure. Well, it may be the case. It may still be the case, of course. But I believe that most people enter priesthood or religious life for worthy motives, because they have a great love of God and a great desire to serve God's people. Now, subconsciously, it may be that a young man or a young woman, or maybe not so young man, or older person, doesn't want to marry or doesn't feel an attraction to the opposite gender, and they may feel that that is an indication that God is calling them to a life of service and celibacy, and I think God can use those ways, those feelings that we have to indicate to us that what path we should follow in life. So I guess I would always like to give the person
more credit and more dignity than that.
I don't think people enter religious life or priesthood for devious motives.
Okay. So we are running out of time, and I guess this subject is one that we could just talk about real briefly.
May I just say one thing before we run out of time?
Sure.
I would like to tell your listeners that I am leading a pilgrimage to northern Italy next March, and I would just like to invite people to come with me.
Sure.
And if they would like, just to visit the New Ways Ministry website.
And all the information is right there on the website. Mm-hmm. I saw it. It looks like a wonderful trip.
Yep.
I wanted to talk, with what Laron was talking about, the pedophile priest problem and what the Vatican has done about it, and your opinion of that. I know, it's such a long subject.
It is a long subject. And to just say very briefly, the Vatican has done too little. It has done something. It's been too little and too late. That's a very trite answer, but it really does fit the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, most recently, in Ireland, the cases that have come to light of the tragedies there, and the Archbishop who has, tried to bring things to the light and called for the resignation of some bishops, and the bishops did submit their resignations, and now just within the last few weeks, it was that the Pope did not accept their resignation. It's a very sad situation because, people are saying, the Catholics are saying, well, the Vatican still doesn't get it.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's the biggest problem. Do you agree with that the Vatican doesn't get it in this case?
Yes. The biggest problem is that the Vatican is totally out of touch with the reality of people's lives.
Mm-hmm. And that's just such a short, simple answer. To something that is, and right, but to such a complex problem, what should be done about it?
Well, the problem is that their associations, people that they meet, they don't meet people in their lives. They don't intersect with the lives of people, and they have to, almost like St. Francis says, if you go out, his followers, St. Francis of Assisi, his brothers said they wanted to go out and preach. He said, fine, just go out and walk the streets. And they said, well, what should we say? He said, nothing. Your preaching is just walking there, being with the people. And the people in the Vatican just need to go out and be with the people. They have to understand what real life for people is about. They have to listen.
Why aren't they listening to, because they have to be hearing this from people like you. That's not even going out into the street. That's just going to their own people, really.
The Pope has people around him who, he's in a bubble.
Sure.
He's just in a bubble.
But he wasn't when he was the person that met you on the plane.
Right. But how often does that happen? How often does he take the plane trip? Do people who sit next to him start talking to him? I don't know.
That's true. I'll bet he still remembers you from that trip. Did he get an invitation to his coronation?
No,
what is it? Not coronation, not swearing in. His
Actually, what is that called?
Well, it's his installation, I guess.
Okay.
But after that plane trip, I did my book, Building Bridges, was translated into Italian, and I sent him a copy. I was in Rome to do promotion for the book, and hand-delivered a copy to his office with a note, but did not get any response.
He didn't, I guess it was an autographed copy. I was going to say he didn't send it back to you. Right?
Well, it wasn't an autographed copy, but I put a note in.
You put the note inside. Okay. Well, that, when we were talking about the pedophile priests, now one of the things that you might know a little bit more about is the bishops in the United States actually did a study to try to link them to gay priests. And their study kind of backfired on them.
Yes, but I wouldn't say that was the purpose of the bishop's study.
Okay.
No. They just asked the John Jay College to conduct this study, which they did. And the conclusion, one of the conclusions, one of the conclusions was that there wasn't any link between pedophilia and homosexuality. And I think bishops pretty much know that, and I think people in the pew know that. There are some, like Bill Donahue, who is the Catholic League. At any rate, he has a high profile, in the press, and he's one that would continue to claim that there is some kind of association. But but by and large, I think. It's the exceptional bishop who would try to say that there's some kind of association. Now, of course, we do hear about those exceptions, in the press. Most bishops, I don't think, link the two.
They don't link the two, right. Sister Janine Gramick, I want to thank you again for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
The hour just flew, and we are out of time. And you keep in touch, because I've enjoyed all of our talks.
Well, thank you, David. Thank you, Ron. And give my... regards to Patty, and I will keep her in my prayers.
Well, thank you for doing that. And we're going out with music from
Adam Lambert.
Have you lost your way? Living in the shadow of the messes that you made. And so it goes. Everything inside your circle starts to overflow. Take a step before you leap into the colors that you see. You give back what you give away, so don't look back on yesterday. I'm gonna scream out, I'm hiding. Don't be afraid of what's inside. Gonna tell you, you'll be alright in the aftermath. Anytime anybody pulls you down, anytime anybody. Contradictions that you live with every day.